ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। The chapter is the downfall of Subharamuni, and today is text 8. Shesham nivedayamasa Pitritena chatadguru Chodita prokshanayaha Tushtametat akarmakam. Translation. Bhikkhukshi offered the remnants of the flesh to King Ikshvaku, who gave it to Vasishta for purification. But Vasishta could immediately understand that part of the flesh had already been taken by Bhikkhukshi, and therefore, he said, it was unfit to be used in the Shraddha ceremony. Srila Prabhupada's short purport. That which is meant to be offered in Jagya cannot be tasted by anyone before being offered to the deity. In our temples, this regulation is in effect. One cannot eat food from the kitchen unless it is offered to the deity. If something is taken before being offered to the deity, the entire preparation is polluted and can no longer be offered. Those engaged in deity worship must know this very well so that they may be saved from committing offenses in deity worship. I know I chant that a little differently than Radhanath Maharaj, so I hope I didn't throw you off. Also, there's several seniors here, Chandrasekhar Prabhu, Srinathji Prabhu, so I beg their blessings before giving this class. I was going to university in 1976, and there was a preaching center in the town where I was going to school. And somehow or other, everyone kind of left the preaching center. Bhadri Narayan Prabhu, who was the temple president, he moved to San Diego. And the other devotees, this was in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and the other devotees moved to Detroit. So I became, Bhakta Brian became the temple president. And we had one other devotee there in the temple. At that time, his name was Bhakta Lani. He later became initiated as Lokanath Prabhu, but this was kind of before his full manifestation of devotion. And he was a jazz musician, and I was going to college. And we had our deities with the original painting of the Panchatattva, the original one painted by Jadarani Mataji. And that was on our altar, and we were worshiping that. So I was the temple president and the head pujari and the cook and the garbage man. Because it was just two of us. So Lani, he was a musician, so he would stay out till about 2 in the morning doing different gigs. And so I offered arti, sang Guru Vastak, etc. So then I would go into the kitchen and cook for Panchatattva. And at around just before the time of offering, off generally, Lani would wake up. So he would take a shower, he'd come down, and almost inevitably, as he was coming down, and I was cooking, it hadn't been offered yet, he would say, something sure smells good. Saying that, you know, what I was cooking for the deities and hadn't been offered yet, smelt good. And I would get, I was, you know, a new brahmachari, and I would get really angry at him every day, saying, it's not offered yet. You have to wait. So now let's compare that mood. Of course, Lani went on to be an initiated devotee, a very nice devotee. At that time, he was still thinking boga smelt good. Fast forward about 20 years, And in my house in Vrindavan, we have a guest room upstairs. And we had the very good fortune of having Jamuna Mataji and Dinatarani Mataji staying in our guest house, in our house. And Jamuna Mataji would cook every day. And a few times I had the good fortune of watching her cook. And watching her cook was a total devotional activity. Before she would cook, she would chant like we just did, the Mangalacharnam. And she would be chanting all the time the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra as she was cooking. And because she was trained personally by Srila Prabhupada, she literally, the kitchen was spotless throughout. From the beginning to the end, it was completely clean. Not just a little clean, it was completely spotless the whole time she was cooking. And then she would, make a plate and offer it to her Radha and Krishna deities. And then as she was serving it, she would describe every preparation and the ingredients that went into it, with complete devotion. So there was a slight difference between her consciousness and that of Bhaktalani back in 1976. And I'd like to, here's something from when, before Jamuna Mataji was initiated, her name was Joan, and probably many of you have read the Lilamrita and remember that she helped Srila Prabhupada cook the first feast, not the first feast, but the first wedding feast that was for her sister. So I'm just going to read a little bit from that to give us some idea about the concepts mentioned in this purport, where Srila Prabhupada says that in our temple, this regulation is in effect. And he was so careful. Prabhupada was even careful back before there were any installed deities. He had me wash my hands and sat me down in front of the in his front room on the floor with a 5-pound bag of flour, a pound of butter, and a pitcher of water. And he looked down at me and said, "Can you make medium soft dough?" I replied, "Do you mean a pastry or a pie crust or a short crust dough? What kind of pastry do you want?" Prabhupada said, "How old are you?" He said, and I said, "I am 25, Swamiji." "You are 25, he said, "and you can't make a medium soft dough? It is a custom in India that any young girl from the age of 5 years is very experienced in making this dough. Never mind, I will show you." It was rather hot that afternoon, and I was perspiring. I asked Swamiji, "May I please have a glass of water?" He peeked his head around the door and said, "Go wash your hands." I immediately did so, and when I returned, Swamiji had a glass of water for me. He explained to me that while preparing this food for offering to the Supreme Lord, one should not think of eating or drinking anything. So after drinking the glass of water, I went in and washed my hands and sat down. About 2 in the afternoon, I said, "Swamiji, may I have a cigarette?" And he peeked his head around the water, and what did he say? "Go wash your hands." No, he didn't say no. He said, "Go wash your hands." So I did, and when I came back, he explained to me the 4 rules of Krishna consciousness. I continued to make the kachoris, and around 3:30 or 4 o'clock, it was extremely warm in the room. And as Swamiji was bringing in one of his preparations, I was wiping my arm and hand across my forehead. He looked down at me and said, "Please go wash your hands." Again, I did so. And upon returning, he had a moistened paper towel for me. He explained that cooking for Krishna requires certain standards of cleanliness and purity that were different than the ones I was accustomed to. So Prabhupada gave us such a high standard, and not just, it's not just the standard, it's the consciousness behind the standard. And it's amazing that just this one simple point, as mentioned in the purport, that we shouldn't taste the preparation before we eat it. Now, I won't ask for a show of hands, but if I did, I would think that many of us in our childhood watching our mother cook saw her sometimes. Make sure there's enough salt, there's enough spice, right? It almost, you know, and I know me from the West, my mother would take the spoon, you know, that she was cooking with. And now that I think about it, it's, but, you know, it's such a natural thing. But just think of all the wonderful, well, you can't think of all of them, but think of a number of the wonderful plates of prasadam that you've had over the years. So tasty. So purifying. And the cook didn't go, right? It's actually amazing how wonderful prasadam tastes without anyone ever going, you know, tasting it ahead of time. It's quite amazing. Of course, you know, every now and then we may have wished the cook had gone like that, you know, because, you know, it's too salty or there's salt in the sweet rice or whatever. But but generally speaking, prasadam is just amazing, and it's all prepared with tons of devotion. What did we say? Love and devotion, not lust and commotion. Right? It's prepared in that way, and it's so wonderful to take. So this is, and the principle behind this is we're offering it to Krishna with devotion. Here's a short statement from a lecture. Prabhupada says, therefore, our program is that we offer Krishna the best foodstuffs. Krishna says, give me this foodstuff. What is this? Anyone know what verse Prabhupada's going to quote? Very good. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktiya. Oh no, he just says patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktiya prayachati tadaham asnami. What does asnami mean? I eat, I accept. Yes, so he Prabhupada's emphasizing the word asnami. If you call a guest, you should ask him, my dear friend, what can I offer you? What would you like to eat? So if he says, this thing, I shall be very pleased. Just like, I hope I got his name right, Nithai Prasad Prabhu. Right? So when I came, he said, Prabhuji, is there any special, anything that you, you know, any special preparations that you need for your health or this or that? So he's following in the footsteps of Prabhupada. Similarly, people may ask, why I cannot offer meat to Krishna? No, Krishna does not say. Krishna does not want it. Krishna is mentioning in Bhagavad Gita, you give me patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati. You give me vegetables, fruits, grains, give me milk, water, flour, nice tulsi. Tadaham asnami, I eat that. Krishna or God, he can eat anything because he is God. He is all powerful. But he is asking the devotees, give me these things. Therefore, our whole mood in deity worship, our whole mood as a devotee is to offer things for Krishna's pleasure. And I have another quote. Sometimes when I give classes like this, somebody says it's a folio class because I got things in folio. But I will try to say something also besides reading. But I was thinking of, let me ask you the question. Who was the person who would not offer the coconut because they thought it was contaminated? Right, Raghavapanda. Okay, so here's something from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. One day it so happened that about 10 coconuts were properly clipped and brought by a servant to offer to the deity. When the coconuts were brought, there was little time to offer them because it was already late. The servant holding the container of coconuts remained standing at the door. Raghava Pandit then saw that the servant touched the ceiling above the door and then touched the coconuts with the same hand. Raghava Pandit then said, people are always coming and going through that door. The dust from their feet blows up and touches the ceiling. After touching the ceiling above the door, you have touched the coconuts. Now they are no longer fit to be offered to Krishna because they are contaminated. Such is the service attitude of Raghava Pandit. He did not accept the coconuts, but threw them over the wall. His service is purely based on unalloyed love, and it conquers the whole world. Therefore, Raghava Pandit had other coconuts gathered, cleansed, and clipped, and with great attention, he offered them to the deity to eat. And here's one sentence from Prabhupada's purport. I always remember, this sentence sparked my memory of this passage. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur states that Raghava Pandit was not simply a crazy fellow suffering from some cleansing phobia. It was not a phobia. And Srila Prabhupada also didn't have a cleansing phobia when he said to Jamuna, wash hands. She must have washed hands more in that day than she did in a month. Right? You know? It was not a cleansing phobia. Both of these are manifestations of bhakti. Both of these are manifestations of love for the deity. Now, when we say that all food has to be offered to Krishna, here's another test. What verse from the Bhagavad Gita comes to your mind? That the devotees only eat food offered to Krishna. Yes, what verse and what verse and what chapter? Not 3.11, close. 3.13, right? Yagya shishtashino santo munchate sarvaklibishai punchate te duham papa ye pachant yatmakaranat. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. And then Prabhupada says that the devotees of the Supreme Lord are called santas. They are always in love with the Lord. And he says, I'm just skipping ahead. He says that those who prepare food for sense gratification, they are thieves and they eat only sin. How can a person be happy if they are a thief and sinful? Therefore, in order for people to become happy in all respects, they must be taught to perform the easy process of Sankirtan Yajna. Okay, so let's take this principle of yajna, because Prabhupada's using that word here in the purport, right? He's saying that that this is a certain kind of yajna, to first offer things to the deity. So taking the principle of that in terms of deity worship and cooking, now let's apply this to Sankirtan. Let's apply this to book distribution, to going out and preaching. So just like we wouldn't do this when we're cooking, right? How can we take that consciousness and apply it to preaching? Apply it to the Sankirtan Yajna. Any thoughts? Do not do it for our personal musical entertainment if we go out on Nagar Sankirtan. Okay, so we would not want to just go out and impress people with our mridanga beats like that. Okay, very good. What else? Everyone was up late for Diwali and they can't think so much? Damodar Dulal, you look like you have an idea. Okay, so we preach not to fulfill our own needs, but as an offering to the Lord. Is that right? Did I get that? Okay. What else? Not enjoy our success. Right, you know, just like, you know, how many devotees have you made? Oh, Prabhuji. Fighter pilots, you know, they have different stars put on their airplane for how many other airplanes they shot down. So we don't put on our kurta, you know, how many devotees made. Right, so we don't try to enjoy our success. Neither do we try to suffer our failures. But that's another thing. Okay, so we don't try to enjoy our success. What else? Anything else? Madhavanandabhu? We preach only to a selected class. Right. Because Lord Chaitanya said he opened the storehouse of love of God and made it available to everyone. He says, sarva atma snapanam. Right? He says, sarva atma. He says it's for everyone. good point. Adikeshwabu, you look like you have a brilliant idea. That we have to be organized and well-behaved, just like we have to be organized and well-behaved. Yes, what are the two things Prabhupada said that are essential in deity worship? Punctuality and cleanliness. So, and now you have given us the sutra for preachers. What is it again? Organized and well-behaved. Organized and well-behaved, yes. We just finished these meetings in Juhu about organizing our preaching. Because, you know, that story, I'm sure most 90% of you know that story, but it's so nice, it's worth repeating, that when Prabhupada, it was the middle of the night, it was close to the time when he left us, it was during Kartik, right, it was probably right around today or a few days ago, and in the middle of the night he called his servant and he said, go get Giriraj. And at that time, I don't think he was a Swami yet, I think he was Giriraj, anyway, Giriraj Maharaj, we'll call him, was sleeping on the roof of the Gurukul building, and the devotee woke him up, and he freshened up and ran to Prabhupada's room, and there was Gopal Bhattabhu just told a story the other day in Juhu, and he had just heard it recently from Giriraj Swami himself, so I certainly can't tell it as well, but briefly, Prabhupada was silent for a long time, and then he said to Giriraj Maharaj, how will this movement go on? And Giriraj Maharaj said something like, I'm not saying exactly, but we have to be sincere and chant Hare Krishna nicely. And Prabhupada was silent for a long time. And then finally he said, intelligence and organization. Right? Not that we shouldn't chant attentively, and we shouldn't be sincere. But he was adding to that, this principle Adikeshwar was bringing up. Okay, so we can take, you know, even these things that happened thousands or millions of years ago and try to extract the essence from them and apply them to our day-to-day lives. So let's talk a little bit about preaching. I think you may remember Pragosh Prabhu. He was not the Irish Pragosh Prabhu, but the American Pragosh Prabhu. I think he spent several months here with his family a couple of years ago. So in those days, he was you know, in his 70s, he was considered, right, Chandrasekhar Prabhu? You know, everyone said, oh, you know, the book distributors like him and Vaisheshika Prabhu and Tripurari Maharaj and others, everyone was, you know, they were like demigods. He was a famous book distributor, and he was an amazing book. Did you ever go out in Sankirtan with him? Yeah, amazing, huh? Amazing person. So one time he asked Srila Prabhupada, sometimes when we're out on Sankirtan, and we don't have any prasadam, so, you know, what should we do? Because we want to concentrate on Sankirtan. So does anyone know what Prabhupada told him? Prabhupada said, he said, on Sankirtan, if it comes to that, you can eat any damn thing. Those were the exact words. Okay? Now I'm going to read you something else in that light. A little later, this is from Harisari Prabhu's Transcendental Diary. Some of the managers here are getting nervous. You know, that how's it going to end this class? All the devotees are going to run out and eat any damn thing. Don't worry, we'll tie up the loose ends. A little later in the conversation, Hansaduda offered to print books in India, and although Prabhupada confirmed that it is his main concern to get huge quantities of books printed in Hindi and English, he told Hansaduda to simply concentrate on the guest house for now. So this is in Vrindavan. He spoke at length, saying that having a guest house was actually his Guru Maharaj's idea. I am just following the desire of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He chuckled as he spoke about his spiritual master's strong desire to preach and spread Krishna consciousness. He said that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta had so stressed the importance of having people come to the temple that he said even if they had to serve meat, by any means they should be induced to come and hear about Krishna. Hangsa Duda and I were quite amazed to hear this. We kind of take it for granted now, we've heard it, but you imagine the first time Prabhupada said it, or at least that Harisari Prabhu and Hangsa Duda Prabhu heard this? We must have looked a little shocked, because Prabhupada reassured us, we will never serve meat. But the idea is that if visitors feel too much inconvenience by our rules, then arrangements can be made for tea or coffee, or even betel or bindi. Bindi? No, bidi, not bindi. Sorry. You know. Bindi, no problem. Bidi, not exactly in our guest house, but some kind of shop in front of the Gurukul building where they can get these things. They are there today also, don't worry. We can even bring tea into the guest house if needed, but we want people will come. We want to give them the opportunity for spiritual life, and therefore we have temple and guest house combined. So, on one hand, we're hearing that even if the person touched the ceiling, the coconuts are not offered, that we can't taste the prep to make sure that there's not too much salt before we offer it to the deity, that we have to be so timely and so clean. And then on the other hand, eat any damn thing. Tea or coffee, we can offer the guests tea. We can serve meat if we have to get people to hear. So is this schizophrenia? Is this a double standard? Is this some kind of misunderstanding? So what's going on here? Okay. So I promise the last thing I'm going to read. This is a very important statement. Practically all devotees should know where this is. This is in the beginning of the sixth chapter of the Nectar of Devotion. A basic principle is that, so listen very carefully. If you're asleep, please wake up. A basic principle is that one has to accept the spiritual master. Exactly how one follows the instructions of a spiritual master is considered a detail. For example, if one is following the instructions of his spiritual master, and that instruction is different from the instruction of another spiritual master, that is called detailed information. But the basic principle of acceptance of a spiritual master is good everywhere. So that's a principle. So, although the details may be different. So principle, details, two different things. Srila Rupa Goswami does not wish to enter the details here, but wants to place before us only the principles. And I just realized that I lied. That's a detail. I have one last thing to read. Listen to this question from Shruti Kirti Prabhu. Such an intelligent question. Such an intelligent question. Shruti Kirti, as he moved to massage Prabhupada's side, asked, Prabhupada, how can we tell the difference between making an adjustment and changing a principle? Prabhupada's eyes closed, and Shruti Kirti continued to massage. After a few moments, Prabhupada opened his eyes, and he said, that takes a little intelligence. This is such an important point in spiritual life, in practicing Krishna consciousness. Rupa Goswami discusses this in the Nectar of Instructions. He talks about the word niyamagraha and niyamagraha, right? And basically it means the niyamagraha, or carrying out an activity without understanding the purpose behind it, it's related to this. We need to understand the principle behind things. Because we all, in our day-to-day lives, have to make time, place, and circumstance decisions. If we base them on a detail, we may kind of miss the point. We first look towards the principles of Krishna consciousness. And when we look towards the principles of Krishna consciousness, there's absolutely no contradiction between saying that you cannot even touch, taste a preparation before offering it and saying eat any damn thing. There's no contradiction whatsoever. We're just talking about different principles. So when we're worshiping the deity, there's a principle. Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, they are Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. They are Radha and Krishna. And we, you know, we are their servants. And therefore, before we go on the altar, we say that prayer, right? We all carry around in our pockets, our figurative pockets, so many upadis. I'm a brahmachari, I'm a grihastha, I'm a sannyasi, I have this inclination, I have an MA, I have a PhD, I didn't go to school, I'm from this caste, I'm from Kashmir or New York, heaven forbid. That's where I'm from. So we carry all these upadis along with us. And when we go on the altar, we say that prayer. We take all of our upadis out of our pocket and leave them outside the pujari room, right? I'm not a brahmachari. I'm not all these things. Gopi bhatar pratha kamala yora dhasa dasa das anudas. I simply go to worship the deity in this consciousness. I am Krishna's servant, right? And so when we're actually physically and mentally worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we have to be on time, we have to be clean, all of these things. That's a principle in deity worship. No, the principle is, or you could even say the overriding principle of that is bhakti. I want to develop my love for Krishna, and this is how I do it. These are the details of how to do it when worshiping the deity. So similarly, when we go out on Sankirtan, right, there's a principle involved, a very, very high principle, and that of saving conditioned souls. Well, not saving, at least giving them a chance to be saved. Right? And therefore, that time that we spend saying Achman and, you know, doing all kinds of details of puja, before we're having lunch and offering and saying, you know, Gayatri, you know, half hour Gayatri. Yeah. That means so many conditioned souls may not get a chance of Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada, he was making a point about this principle. He wasn't literally telling Pragosh Prabhu to go out and, you know, eat non-veg or eat some slimy thing, you know. But he was making a point that the preaching is so important. The giving a chance to conditioned souls to hear about Krishna, to get one of Srila Prabhupada's books, is so important. We may not have the same details as we do for the pujari who's worshiping Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. Now, we sometimes have to be a little careful. On both ways, especially, you know, on Sankirtan, it's not that we just, you know, what do we used to say? Instead of Sari Radha Vijajal, we'd say, started off before you all, now I'm going to eat it all. Right, like that, you know, that was one of our mantras. So that's not the point. But we need to... It's just like when we have philosophical discussions and somebody, you know, it always happens, right? We read something, some passage from the Bhagavatam. An example isn't coming to my mind right this second. And we think, yeah, but how does that relate to this? You know, it seems like a contradiction. Just as Prabhupada Swami, we have to understand principles. We have to understand Siddhanta. And therefore, the details that we read in different parts of the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, they all get matched up to the Siddhanta and understood in light of that. Just like we say the Paribhasya Sutra is Ete Chang Sakala Pungsam Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. And Jiva Goswami says that all the verses in the Bhagavatam all point towards that. So we might say, well, how does today's verse point towards that? But ultimately it does, because as we're going through the different incarnations, as we're going through the Bhagavatam, it's all preparing us for that, the 10th canto. It's all preparing us to understand that this little boy eating makkhan with his left hand instead of his right hand, and his, you know, and all these things. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so when we understand Siddhanta, we understand these points, we understand the material world, we understand the Jiva, we understand Sambandha Gyan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and everything fits into that and is related to that. So we need to exercise our intelligence. We need to, because Prabhupada says it takes a little intelligence. And sometimes devotees, it's healthy, but sometimes we have good, healthy debates about details, right? Or should we preach in this way? Should we preach in that way? Can we use guitars or trumpets in kirtan? Or should we just call kartal? You know, these are things that we just have to make sure that we are having good, healthy debates about details, and make sure that we understand the principle behind those, and try not to confuse a detail for a principle and a principle for a detail. If we make a principle a detail, we are in big trouble spiritually, philosophically. We are in dangerous ground. And if we make a detail or a principle, we become a bit fanatical sometimes. Right? So we should be intelligent, apply our intelligence to Srila Prabhupada's books and his teachings, and understand the difference behind a principle and a detail. And whatever we do, don't taste the boga before it's offered. Any questions, comments? I have to pick up my upadis. Do we use a microphone here?
Yeah, this is a question arising from Prabhupada's answer.
Okay.
It requires intelligence. Now, okay, beyond this, there a further question. What does it mean?
wait, what was that first part of the second
First part is, Prabhupada said...
Yes, I got that.
It requires sentence. Intelligence.
Yes.
So that generates another question. What kind of intelligence? What is that intelligence?
What is that intelligence? Well, I'm going to answer it in that, you know, that can be answered in a lot of ways. I could quote, for example, the Dami Buddha Yangam Tvam, right? I'm not going to right now. I just did. Anyway. But because I've just come from the GBC meetings, I'm going to apply this a little bit to our society. And Prabhupada was careful not just to invest his faith in understanding this point to one person. And therefore he created a team of devotees. You know, he called it the GBC. And that, you know, at least on crucial points, that they would take decisions on this. That he trusted the intelligence of the group. One person might go off a little or this or that or, you know, but the collected intelligence of sincere people who are coming together to try to understand the will of Prabhupada and carry it out. So there's a strength in numbers. As a matter of fact, I don't think this is too confidential. Well, one of the discussions this week was about the number of... What we're trying to do is these meetings were not about problems, day-to-day problems, which the GBC also have to deal with. The only discussion was about the future and strategic planning and trying to get in place things that will help once all of our, you know, the people who actually had Prabhupada's association are no longer with us. So one of the points that was discussed was, what is the optimum number of GBCs? And a few devotees were arguing very strongly and very convincingly that it should never go below 25. And their reason was this, that if it gets too low, you know, their point was, there's a strength in numbers, and because if you say 25, then a quorum is 13, then a majority is 7, and you start getting a little worried, right? That, you know, if decisions for the whole society could be decided by 7 people voting one way, right? So that's one thing that we discuss with our other devotees. And of course, another way to answer it naturally is guru, sadhu, and shastra, right? And we consult those three. And so I think that there's an important concept here that Prabhupada put a lot of faith in, that sangha of devotees is very helpful to get that that combined intelligence. And we know that, now answering it in slightly different, we know that intelligence comes from Krishna. I just said the Dami Buddhi Yogam Tam, right? And what's that verse in chapter 15, verse 15? Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto mata smitir gyanam apohanam chan. So is that all right? Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Yes, Prabhu? The chasma wala?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna,
Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
So sometimes while dealing with friends, this principle that for preaching you can eat any damn thing. Sometimes actually our friends force us to take milk from outside or tea sometimes. So actually we try to avoid, and that brings something that they think that these are very rude peoples, they don't accept our principles. So how to deal with in these such situations?
Is this a principle or a detail? Sounds like a detail. What I would do, if it was me, is I'd get a note from Adikeshwar Prabhu, my doctor, saying, or from somebody in the hospital saying, no, I cannot have tea or milk. I'm sorry, Prabhu, but my doctor says, what can I do? It's very much time, place, and circumstance. The point here is that we is our sincerity. If we think, oh, wow, this is a really cool opportunity to eat any damn thing, jai. You know, that's one thing. You know, I by Krishna's mercy, I get to spend some time, actually I won't mention it, but in a certain communist country where we have to preach underground. And there, the devotees tell us, especially the devotee businessmen, say it is very difficult. Because first of all, it's hard in this country to find vegetarian food. And second of all business deals are done over a meal in this country. They're all done over a meal. So they have to be, even some of them who are bhaktas, not initiated yet, literally break, you know, they eat chicken or something like that. I mean, you know, it's, I won't mention the country, but it's a very difficult country to preach. Not naturally, but even for those who are initiated and are devotees, they say it's real, you have to be very creative with your excuses, you know. Basically, one of them brings something with them and says, my doctor said, I just can't eat anything questionable because it has any this or this in it, you know. But I think the principle is that we try to avoid, we try to follow strictly as possible, and that as possible is important because just like there's that one time in the Lilamrita, and again, there's onions in one of the preparations. And the devotee is sitting next to Srila Prabhupada and kind of, you know, Srila Prabhupada, there's onions in the preparation. And what does Prabhupada say? No, there's not. You know, basically saying, be quiet, right? No, he tasted it. No, Srila Prabhupada, there's definitely onions in the preparation. No, there's not. Eat it. Right? So in that time, in that place, in that circumstance, he didn't want to take the chance of offending that host. But in other times, in other places, in other circumstances, he said, we cannot. Right? We will only eat our food. So it is, time, place, and circumstance actually is a principle. Right? And so we have to use our intelligence, but I think my other point is the most important point, that we just don't try to cheat. What is it, drinking water underwater on a fast day? You know, we don't have that kind of cheating mentality. Oh, I've got invited to so-and-so's place, and you know, they don't, but you know, anyway, it's for preaching. You know, so we try to be as strict as possible. Yet we also, you know, judge according to time, place, and circumstance, and what would be favorable for preaching. Is that okay? Did I hear a question? Another question? No? Just trying to... Oh, yes, Prabhu. Oh, this is translated in English. What if we don't have faith? That God really eats. What if we don't have faith that God really eats? We should still eat prasadam, because we will be purified even if we don't know it. I think we actually have the experience, all of us in this room, there's a difference between prasadam and ordinary food. I don't want you to make an experiment, okay? But there is a difference. There's a certain quality. And if we don't have faith, that's okay. Just keep taking prasadam. Like, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he was in charge of the Radha Damodar bus party, and I remember this one story. A devotee told me that this person came up to him, and you know, in those days, you know, you were either in or you were out. So the devotee said to Maharaj, "I'm leaving. You know, this isn't for me. It's just not my cup of chai." Probably didn't say chai because it was in America, but you know. And so Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, "Fine, no problem. Before you go, take some prasadam," right? And so in those days, they had this big container of halava always available, right? So he had a big plate of prasadam, he took it, then Maharaj took a big ladle of halava and put it on his plate. He ate that, and this happened 2, 3, 4 times. You know, no more, no more. Maharaj said, "Okay, one more time." And after he had that, he actually decided to stay. So, you know, certain parts of Krishna consciousness, they take effect knowingly or unknowingly. Obviously, it's better to have faith, right? We say that prayer, that prayer is not meant to be, you know, started off before you all, now I'm going to eat it all, you know, kind of thing. It actually has a very deep meaning. And so, like anything, we call it prasad seva, right? So when we serve in a deeply meditative fashion, of course it has a greater effect. But if we don't have faith, take prasadam anyway. Last point, and appropriately, we save the best for last from Sri Nasri Prabhu.
Thank you for your wonderful class, as usual. I heard this from Giriraj Swami, so I'm just repeating what my Shikshak Guru has told me. There are two types of faiths. One is blind faith, and the other is informed faith. So the smarta Brahmins are going by blind faith. That's the difference between the blind faith. Similarly, the smarta Brahmins are more interested and only interested in details. They've forgotten the principles. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came back to this world as Krishna, as a devotee form, so he brought the principles back and he brought the knowledge faith. Because India was deteriorating at that time by having blind faith and just ritualistic. So the whole idea is that if you don't have knowledge and faith, then you're in trouble. If you have only knowledge and no faith, then you're in trouble. And if you have faith but no knowledge, you're in trouble. So you have the combination of knowledge and faith, then you can stick to Krishna consciousness. Now, answering, if I may, on about this prasad, I heard that prasad is in two forms. The gross form, which we see and touch and so on, and the other is a subtle form. Krishna is not interested in gross things. He's not material, whereas our body is material. So our body needs material things. Krishna needs the gross things, if he wants, but he doesn't want. He only takes the subtle things. So in the prasad, there is a subtle portion, just like you have smell in a rose, that's a subtle smell. You can't see it, you can't measure it, you can't weigh it. But it's there, the subtle smell of the rose. So Giriraj Maharaj explained to me that Krishna takes the subtle part of the prasad, that's what he eats. And he leaves behind for us the mercy, because our body needs, he knows that our body needs a physical thing. And he adds on his own mercy in the subtle form. Because what we offer him is a material subtle, whereas he transforms that material subtle into a spiritual subtle. And he transforms the material food into spiritual food. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So the purport of what Srinathji Prabhu said, amongst other things, we should be smart, not smarta. Right? Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.